Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 33, Bosun's Call.
Discuss this further, but as you can see, I have a recording.
Oh, come on. Look, it's not a big deal. We just need to do a few of them again.
Out of the question.
It's just confusing, if not. Like the garbage man statement.
Mr. Woodward.
Yeah, so you said that Alan Parfitt was reported missing in August 2009, which had actually be 6 months after the statement had been given.
Obviously, it should have been 2008. I misspoke an 8 as a 9. What does it matter?
Well, someone noticed.
Who?
Josh Cole. Great guy. He's one of the students using our resources for a dissertation. And here, in Miss Montauk's statement about her father's killings, you refer to case 9220611 as case 1106922. Oh, and don't get me started on the other case numbers around the Hilltop hauntings. They're a mess.
Alleged hauntings. And who honestly cares if I misspoke case 9220611 as 1106922? Another student?
Well, actually, yes. Samantha Emery. She's lovely. She's actually doing a PhD in manifestations.
I don't care. It's not enough that Gertrude left us with such a pointlessly awkward filing system. Half the time she doesn't even stay consistent in her own records.
To be honest with you, I don't really understand the system either.
Last three digits of the year, then the day, then the month. I don't know why she did it like that, but I can't change it now.
Oh, okay. All right, so what happens if more than one statement is given on the same day?
I don't know. It never came up. Was there anything else?
Oh, yeah, just one.
Good Lord.
So in case 816-3103, it isn't clear if Albrecht's wife is called Clara or Carla, because you keep switching back and forth.
Well, I'm sorry if I found it hard to read a 200-year-old letter written in cursive by a native German speaker. Who complained about that one?
Oh, it's not a complaint. I just noticed, actually. look, okay, I know you've been under a lot of pressure. It's not a big deal. I just think it might be worth re-recording these statements.
No. I don't have time. I still have a mountain of haphazard statements to get through, not to mention that I need to keep this wretched tape recorder on hand just in case I encounter one of the files too stubborn to work on anything else, and when I do, I have to actually
read the damn thing,
which is fine. It's fine. I just haven't been sleeping much these last few months. What with all this worm business, which reminds me, if you do see Elias, tell him thanks for the extra extinguishers.
Yeah, sure. It's getting bad. I mean, Martin keeps showing me his tongue, asking if it looks infested. So what do you want me to do about these errors?
I really don't care. Put a post-it on the tapes or something. I'm not re-recording them. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Oh, yeah, sure, yep. I'll let you get back to it.
Right. Oh. Still running. Okay. Statement of Carlita Sloane regarding her work on a container ship traveling to Southampton from Porto de Itaqui. Original statement given January 2nd, 2011. Audio recording by Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Statement begins. I've been working the shipping routes for years now, so I know there's plenty of messed up things can happen out there. You remember the old saying, worst things happen at sea? Well, let me tell you, it's just as true now as it ever was. But I've never seen weird like I saw when serving on the Tundra. I didn't even want the job, really, but I didn't have a lot of choice. We'd just hit Porto de Itaqui in Brazil in late November of last year when the ship I was on got stopped because of cargo irregularities. I don't know what it was. Might have been drugs, human trafficking. Might have just been a crooked harbour master looking for a kickback, but it didn't really matter. Point was, I had to jump ship. This wasn't an easy thing, though. A sailor's union should be recognised anywhere in the world, but when it came down to it, my membership of Nautilus, a UK union, meant nothing when I was trying to get a place on a cargo run coming out of Brazil. Didn't help that I'm a woman. A lot of people don't think shipping is a job for women. Hell, a lot of people who work on ships don't think it is. You don't see a lot of us in the trade, and every ounce of respect I got, some dick-waving asshole probably bled for. But that's fine. I can hold my own, and it hasn't been such a problem since I shaved my head. It was enough to keep me on land for a good few days, though, as I tried to find another ship to take me on. Well, that and my bad Spanish. I'm sure I don't need to tell you how relieved I was when I heard that a British ship had made port, the Tundra. Now, at that point, I was starting to get a bit desperate, so I was keen to go to the captain and just about beg passage. Screw my qualifications. If he needed, I'd sign on as a workaway. I could find a better position once I was somewhere I spoke the language properly. I eventually found the captain in a small bar in one of the seedier areas of the dockside. I'd been told his name was Peter Lucas, but to be honest, I wouldn't have needed his name. He was the only white guy in the place. Even by those standards, he was very pale. Weirdly so for someone who apparently lived their life on the sea. He sat there at a small table, completely alone, drinking a cup of black coffee. He was staring into the distance and didn't seem to notice anything going on around him. I sat down opposite and coughed. His eyes only moved a fraction of an inch to focus on me, but it felt as though the movement had the weight of a heavy stone door. Like a tomb. Don't know why that's what popped into my head, but there you go. I asked if he was Peter Lucas, and he said yes. I'd gone blank on what to say next, and it was then that I noticed the silence. I looked around to see that the place was now completely empty. Even the bartender was nowhere to be seen, and the only sound was the whir of the ceiling fans above us. The captain was still staring at me, so I swallowed my unease and began to explain my situation to him. I left out the part about the criminal possibilities of my last ship, but was clear that I was in desperate need of a new post. When I had finished, he was quiet for a few minutes. Then he nodded. "We have one space. Report tomorrow. At dawn." That was all he said, and it was all I needed. The Tundra wasn't difficult to find when I headed to the docks the next day. It was big, already stacked high with an array of colourful shipping containers. I wondered if they'd loaded it up overnight, as there didn't seem to be much activity from the crane. It was early, and I was glad I was leaving Brazil before the wet season really got going, as the sky was threatening to break. Making my way through the dock, I asked around until I was finally pointed to the mate. He was a short man, heavy set, with a thick black beard. His warm brown skin was stained darker by a life working in the sun, and he didn't smile when he looked at me. Around his neck, I saw a chain ending in a small brass ball and stem. It looked like an old bosun's call, an antique sailor's whistle. I introduced myself, told him what I'd told the captain, and gave my qualifications and experience. The bearded mate listened quietly until I finished. Then he shrugged and said they were in need of an ordinary seaman, and I was welcome to the position if I wanted it. OS was a bit of a step down for me, as I'd been pulling able seaman pay for these last few years, but it was a ticket out of Porto de Itaqui, so I jumped at the chance. The mate still didn't smile, but he did offer his hand, and introduced himself in a gentle Dutch accent as Thaddeus Dahl, first mate of the Tundra. I was surprised, as it seemed a bit abrupt to be leaving, and I hadn't even had time to stow away the duffel bag that was my only luggage. Still, I wasn't about to disobey the first order I'd been given on a new ship. The Tundra was pretty normal. I've served on a half-dozen ships almost identical to it, and I fell into my duties quickly. We set off almost as soon as I was on board, and it was only later I discovered we were heading across the Atlantic towards Southampton. I was very happy to find that out, as I had assumed we'd be making plenty more stops before crossing back to England. With any luck, it wouldn't be more than a couple of weeks before I was home, and those would be spent in maintenance, repainting, and taking watches with Iron Mike, the autopilot. So that was fine. But I did start to notice a few things on board which didn't really seem to add up. The first was the crew. They were quiet. Very quiet. I mean, I've been on ships where I was pretty much the only native English speaker, and plenty of people prefer to keep to themselves. Hell, not being too comfortable around people is a damn fine reason to go to sea. This was different, though. It wasn't just that they didn't talk much. They seemed uncomfortable with me. They'd avoid eye contact and only barely acknowledge me if we were on shift together. At first, I thought it was because I was a woman, but then I saw that it wasn't just me. They avoided each other just as much as they did me. Meals were always quiet, no matter how many people were eating, and there was no friendly game of cards or chat in the living quarters. There was no real conversation in any language. It was like they were doing everything in their power not to think about each other. It took me less than a day of ignored hellos and grunted answers before I fell into line, becoming just as quiet as my crewmates. The only person who spoke was Thaddeus Dahl. The mate would walk among the crew, giving instructions and orders in a dozen different languages as the crew scrambled to carry out his commands. He was just as composed as he had been when I met him, and it soon became clear that, if he had emotions, he kept a tight wrap on them. He would stride along the ship, his antique whistle swinging from his neck. He never actually blew the bosun's call, apparently preferring to summon the crew via the intercom or horn. It just hung there, its polished brass heavy around his neck. I didn't see Captain Lucas at all that first week. I only knew he was on board because every mealtime the cooks would hand a tray of food to the mate, who'd take it up to the captain's cabin. We never saw the man himself, though. There was one crew member who did catch my eye. He was a young guy, white, and, from what I could tell,